Greetings and welcome back to another episode of Warrior Mind Podcast. I'm Greg Swanson, your mental strength coach, guide, and mentor. To find out more about mental strength and Warrior Mind coaching and training, you can visit us at www.warriormindcoach.com or you can visit our world famous blog at www.warriormindcoach.com/blog. And with me again today, I have my good friend and producer, Rishi.
Thank you, Greg. Today is a really exciting day because we're going to be talking about the mind.
Yes, the mind. It's wonderful. The mind. Mind games. Well, not necessarily mind games. Well, kind of mind games. Because in order to play mind games with ourselves, we have to know kind of the facts of the game or the facts of the mind.
And what are some of those facts?
So, yeah, we're going to talk a little bit about some of these basic facts of the mind. And some people say brain and mind. I like to use the mind as what the brain does.
So mind is not the physiological, but more of the thoughts?
Correct. The mind I look at is what the brain does. So okay. The mind is the process or the byproduct or the thoughts. That's in one essence. In another esoteric essence, the mind is all of us and we're all the mind and we're all the one. And
all trapped in a box, right?
Right.
That's
all trapped
what the
in
mind does.
Right. Traps us in a box. So what we're going to do is just kind of do a little bit of talking about some of the facts about the mind. And the first one, which is really, really, really important, is that the mind follows directions. So you give your mind a direction, it follows it. Because, well, that's kind of makes sense, right? However, what directions are you giving it? So there's another twist to this, that whatever the thinker thinks, the prover proves. So by tying those two together, right? The brain follows directions.
That's like perception is projection.
But it's your own perception is your own projection.
Okay.
So if you think that you are stupid, that's the thinker. The prover will prove the thinker right.
Okay.
So the prover will then have you go into situations and create situations to prove that you're stupid.
Okay.
And so that is also part of the brain following directions. If you tend to give your brain a direction, or your mind, I should say, a direction of, I'm no good, I'm worthless, this isn't working, that's giving, if you were thinking that as programming your brain, your mind, with software going, you're useless, you're worthless, you're no good, you're fat, you're ugly, and those are programs that your software is going to run, what do you think is going to run?
Correct. And that, now I'm really scared because here I am thinking, okay, you know, we all have these thoughts. You know, at least, you know, once in our lifetimes we've had these thoughts, oh, I'm worthless, I'm incompetent. But then you go into some kind of a mode where you're proving yourself that you are worthless or incompetent, but it's not someone else that's controlling your life to become worthless or incompetent. It's you controlling that. It's you that's the one that's leading you to become. It's you that's leading you to prove that you're worthless. And that's the scary part because it's not someone else. It's you.
Right. And that's that back to that self-fulfilling prophecy.
Oh, crap.
Right? Part. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But we can even take this into more of a subtle fashion because I think many of our listeners and readers probably understand the importance of self-talk and not necessarily calling themselves stupid. However, if you take it down a little, tweak it, if you're not feeling well, do you say that I'm sick? So you may feel that way, but are you feeling that way because you thought you're getting sick and then you manifest it more by saying that you don't feel well, so you keep not feeling well? If you look at everything you say as giving yourself instructions, you know, you go back and look at the biology of belief, how to evolve your brain by Joe Dispenza, all of these things, these are very powerful. And we may say it once, like, oh, I'm feeling healthy, and not feeling, go, it doesn't work. Well, that's because we've programmed ourselves so much to say that I don't feel good, I don't feel good, I don't feel good. And there's a pathway that is already ingrained in our neurosynapsis to go that way. So by saying it once isn't going to necessarily change immediately. The important thing about understanding that the mind follows directions is to continuously give it good directions.
All right. That makes sense because suppose that you give me directions on how to get to your house and you only tell me once, and I get, and then, you know, I can't fully understand, you know, the entire directions, which street to turn, or what road to go, and what you know, what house number you live in. You know, I can't learn all that once. You have to keep repeating to me how to get to your house. That is, if you're going to, you know, tell me verbally. Is that how it works?
You know, that is a really good analogy. I like using analogies and metaphors that we can actually are tangible, and maps are good ones, right? So map to your house. And if you think of that as, if you look at your life is you walking through your map, and you have directions to where you want to go. You want to have a prosperous, healthy, loving life. Are you giving your mind directions to go that way? Or are you giving your mind directions that people are jerks, they're idiots, nobody's out there, there's a bunch of crooks out there, you know, money is evil? Are you giving yourself directions to go an opposite way of where you really want to go? Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, so you look at where you want to go. That's the most important thing. So in order for you to give your mind directions, you kind of have to know where you're going. You don't just go to a travel agency. I want to take a vacation. Where to? I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, so you know where you're going. You know what type of life you want to live and create. And then you start giving your mind directions to take you there.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it's not going to be overnight, because if you look at however old or young a person is, however long you've existed in this plane, it has taken you that many years to program your mind the way it works now.
Mm-hmm.
If you give it conscious and concerted directions, you don't have to wait that same amount before it to turn around. It can turn around a lot sooner. It's just going to take diligence and focused attention. So,
but that attention is very powerful that you give. The attention that you give is amazing.
Exactly. So that's the first one, is that the mind follows your directions. And the question is, what directions are you giving it? And what is the prover proving?
Okay.
Number two is the brain externalizes instructions. So we're giving them instructions, right? So the number one is the brain, or the mind follows directions. And then the mind externalizes those directions, those mm-hmm. instructions. So again, if you say you're sick, you're going to manifest it. You can also look at the way people verbalize their words that they use. That's also externalized. So the way somebody walks, their posture, the way they talk, the way they approach life is the externalization mm-hmm. of those instructions. So it's not just we're talking to ourselves.
Yes.
I mean, that's bad enough, but we talk to ourselves, then produces, this is the perception is projection part, the externalization. So what we see and what we live is our mind externalizing all those thoughts.
Both good and bad, or bad?
Well, yeah, of course. It's always good and bad. I mean, that's the one thing, is that it's amazing that when something bad happens, we'll criticize ourselves for not having it work out correctly. When something good happens, we say it's luck.
Mm-hmm.
We don't say, oh, I did that. Right, it's funny, because if you look at it, if you truly believe, and science has proven it correct, that perception is projection, our mind follows directions and externalizes it, and if it's a bad thing and we criticize ourselves, which is really not that supportive, mm-hmm. but if it's a good thing, we should reward ourselves.
Yes.
But we don't.
We don't.
And
where does coaching fit in regards to having positive conversations with yourself, so you could achieve your goals and achieve the results that you desire?
That's great, because this is one of the things I love about coaching and working with clients, is many times a client, and just people in general, will surround themselves with someone they're like. So if somebody has a bad attitude, they're going to be around people with bad attitudes. Nobody with a bad attitude is going to hang around with somebody with a good attitude. And even if you have a good attitude, you're going to tend to, you know, birds of a feather flock together. So it's difficult for friends, family to point out or even observe this difference in talk. So when a coach comes in, the person comes to the coach, to me, saying, hey, I want to achieve this. I've been trying to achieve XYZ. I haven't been, I don't understand it, and these jerks keep getting in my way, and I go, oh, okay, okay. So by listening to how the client expresses how they perceive their world, I'm able to help slowly take those glasses and put on new glasses, change those filters, clean up the lenses, and do other things to help them understand how they're creating their own reality, if you will. It comes back to that. We all create a reality. And this, these functions or these facts of the mind actually describe how we do create that. So with coaching, I'm able to go in there, dig into their mind, into their thoughts, look at their behaviors, and take their behaviors and backfeed it, if you will, or break it down as to what created that behavior, and it comes down to thoughts, mm-hmm. and show them how this is not being supportive on what they want to do. And they go, ah, oh, so it's great shifts in that.
And anyone interested can visit your website for more information on coaching.
Absolutely. Yep. Have some great programs there that they can take a look at, and thank you for mentioning that as well. Okay. And so then the third part is our mind runs on representations. And what that means is it basically runs on images. And it's we don't really work from the exact word, although with good spellers, they see the words. Mm-hmm. But if you think of something like happy, mm-hmm. you create a feeling inside, but you also create a picture.
Yes.
I wouldn't even want to say a picture, but it's more of a... an internal representation that involves either a visual, an auditory, a kinesthetic, olfactory, or gustatory. Somewhere we create an internal representation.
Okay, so we create the... So I'm guessing naturally the internal representation comes first. For instance, happy, so you have like an internal feeling of what happiness is, and then the picture, the images follow?
Yeah, it's almost you... There, it's a... Tit for tat, you know, okay. the chicken and the egg. You at one point in time when you were young, you felt good and you heard your parents say, oh, you must be very happy. So you go, oh, this is what happy feels like. Because if nobody told you, you wouldn't know what it is, mm-hmm. right? Somebody had to label that feeling for you. Somebody had to label hate, fear, love, anger, happy, joy. Because we don't know what it is as a little kid. We're just experiencing mm-hmm. laughter. So when somebody labels it, we then say, oh, this is what it is. And for our brain to understand and process that feeling, it has to create a representation of it so it knows to go there, because okay. it goes there for a familiar feeling. Remember way back in one of our earlier podcasts, we talked about delete, generalize, and distort. Mm-hmm. And this comes into it. When we see something or feel something, it falls into one of those, mm-hmm. it gets filtered through one of those deletions, distortions, or generalizations, and that creates this internal representation mm-hmm. that we have of happy or joy or sad. Mm-hmm. Well, what's really cool is that so that thought, that picture, that internal representation manifests into happy. So you feel happy. You sit up straighter. You start laughing. Mm-hmm. You feel confident because you start to walk better. And that we usually are under the control, or we think we're under the control of external circumstances to have that representation. Somebody cuts us off, we boom, get angry. We have an internal representation first, and then we have the sensation. Mm-hmm. Well, what's really great is, since we are, as you so said in the beginning, that we are controlling our own thoughts, we are mm-hmm. thinking our thoughts. It's us who's doing the thinking. Mm-hmm. We can think of a beautiful sunny day mm-hmm. and see green grass, blue skies, white puffy clouds, mm-hmm. and then that'll start to manifest in our body. Yes. So when we think of images, mm-hmm. it creates those feelings as opposed to seeing the words. So if you read a book, you create images. Mm-hmm. And it's the same thing. If you just read the words, beautiful sunny day, and didn't have an image with it, it'd be non-emotional.
Yeah.
But because
it would just be words.
Right, it would just be words. And it's what brings books alive is our picture. When we read it, we create internal images, which then create emotions within inside of us. Mm-hmm. So it's not just books, but we can control that ourselves. Mm-hmm. So part of knowing that the mind thinks in representations is we can now create pictures mm-hmm. to create the emotions that we want. We are not there's no happiness out there. Mm-hmm. There's no sadness out there. It's all inside by our pictures. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of a really cool part of also. Number four, this is really, hopefully our listeners haven't participated in this yet today, but during this session, but the mind transitions in and out of the present moment. Basically, you know, we wander. Yes. You know, we're sitting in class, a boring class, or hopefully not during this podcast, and you're listening to it, and your mind starts to wander.
Oh, what are you saying?
Well, right. Or about the sunny beach, right? Yeah, when we describe the beautiful weathers, maybe somebody wandered off and thought of that and stayed there. So
they're still staying there
right
now.
Right. Come on back. Yeah. So this transition in and out of the present moment, is we do that naturally. That's daydreaming, that's fantasizing, that's planning, that's reliving the past. All of those.
Rehearsing your speech, rehearsing what you'd say in a made-up situation that may approach.
Exactly. And so all this transition is from this present state. So if you look at your entire day, and the amount of times that you transition, which, by the way, trance—the word trance comes from.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
So when you trance, you are transitioning from now to some other point in time. So when you're in trance, you're in transition. Most of our day is spent in trance.
Yes.
So it's kind of, we think that we're wide awake throughout our whole day, and if you look at how often we revisit the past, revisit the future during that whole day, or revisit some other part. I don't know if there's anything else besides future, present, and past.
Not in our third day.
Right.
We're only limited to three dimensions. I mean.
But if you look at it, we are spending most of our day in trance.
Yes.
When we're watching a commercial and they're talking about the good life, we all of a sudden think of ourselves in the good life. So we're in trance. So when we're in trance is when we're very susceptible to information.
Yes, fears, even, you know, the fears that are processed in the amygdala in our brain can happen.
Yes, and that's where, when, you know, hypnosis involves a trance, a transition, because hypnosis takes you from an external state to an internal part. So you're transitioning, and the trance part is really important to understand that you normally go into trance during the day. So when you listen to a hypnosis or an affirmation audio or some other part of that, the trance works because you do it to yourself every day. And to know, then the key is to take it and purposely go into trance for your own benefit, as opposed to letting somebody else put you into trance.
And also letting your... That's interesting when you said letting someone else put you into trance, because even that someone else can be yourself, but as yourself... thinking unproductive thoughts.
Exactly. And as soon as you start thinking that, you're in trance, because you're transitioning from what you're doing right now. This is like Edgar Tolle talks about, be here now. Right?
Yes.
Be in the present. Well, when you're in the present, you're not in trance, because you're here. You're observing, you're watching, you're participating, you're fully engaged with what you're doing now. As soon as you start to think about what may happen in the future, or what do I have to do later on tonight, and you start thinking about cooking the meal or whatever it is, you're in transition, so you are in trance.
I have something I want to share with you, because when I first started reading this type of philosophy and applying it, I noticed there was a big difference in a lot of areas. For example, it took me a really long time to get ready for the day. You know, to put on something as simple as putting on clothes after you know, getting out of the shower, but it takes such a long time because my mind was in trance thinking about you know, the future, thinking about reliving past events, all kinds of stuff that was going on in my mind, conversations with myself, rehearsing speeches, or rehearsing conversations of what I'm gonna say if I was put in a certain situation. And what happened was I'd take such a long time to get ready, whereas when I just focus on being in the present, where I am now, not thinking about past, future stuff, but just thinking about where I am now, I look at my shirt, all I was processing in my brain was, oh, red shirt, oh, pants, socks, okay, kind of like Frankenstein. underwear. Yeah. And by that, you know, how long would it take me to get ready before? Oh, 20, 25 minutes. How long would it take me to get ready just, you know, shutting, just being in the present? 30 seconds.
Yeah. That's great story. That is great, great story because it's part of that discipline and practice that we all need to do is to understand that this is so important, and you brought it up again in the beginning, is that we are the ones thinking the thoughts. And when you say, or not you, but I'm using the generic you, when people say that they can't control their thoughts, who else is controlling them? It's them. They, even if somebody tells you to do something, you have the choice of doing it or not. So it's really important that the self-empowerment, self-power, all of the self-development, all these programs out there and these philosophies are to help individuals understand that they control their own thoughts. They are the ones. They're the masters of their ship, right?
Yes.
And to understand that and then start applying it little by little like you did, like saying, okay, right, you know, instead of thinking about my whole day, I'm going to think about this button needs to go here. Just tie the shoe here. Do these green pants and this red shirt really go? Well, during Christmas.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So when you focus on the deeds at hand, then you start to train your mind. And then when you train your mind to do that, you can train it to do other things. So when you train your mind to give focus, you can then train your mind to go into transition.
Yes.
And when you go into transition with intention and purpose, that's where visualization comes in. That's where journey work comes in. That's where all the other altered states come in when you do it intentionally. If you just let your mind wander around, that's another one of the program. One of the rules is that just loves to stay in motion. It just goes in motion. It's hard to stand still. It's naturally in motion,
mm-hmm.
And so by learning to control the transitions, mm-hmm. you're able to control your life.
Yes, yes.
So then the next one it comes to is the mind induces state. And what I mean by state is your feelings, your happiness, your confidence. Those are all states. And many times we think that our state is dependent on the external. And we go, well, when I get this job, I'll be happy. When I find this, when I'm able to get to black belt, I'll have courage. When I'm able to do this, I'll... And that's not the case. It's the mind creates those states internally. States are not dependent externally. They're dependent on how you assign meaning to them. And you can sit here right now and create a state of confidence. If I just have everybody sit up straight, put your chest out, shoulders back, head up high, automatically you feel more confident. If I tell you to slouch your shoulders, look at your feet, breathe shallow, talk softly, you're probably feeling a little bit depressed, and so I won't go there anymore.
You're looking at me. I see you're looking at me and saying if you're slouching, looking down.
So how does this help anybody, right? So what's big deal? So your mind creates state. Well, if you find yourself walking along the street, looking at your shoes, mm-hmm. and you notice, hey, I'm looking at my shoes. I don't feel very good. You're able to control that by thinking. Your mind says stand up, sit up straight. So you stand up straight or sit up straight, and your mind's able to control your state, because your mind will also change your physiology, and your physiology will change your state. So you're not, and again, you're thinking of a thought or a picture that's making your head look down at the ground, mm-hmm. and looking at your shoelaces and feeling that way. So your mind creates the state regardless of what state you're in. Even if you're in your depressed state, your mind's creating that.
It reminds me of something Dwayne Dyer said, that whenever a thought would occur that was, you know, just not that was negative and just a thought that was unproductive or that brought him down, when that occurred to him, what he'd say is, next.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. Yep. That is, you know, those thoughts, and that's where you can be selective of your thoughts, of the pictures, and then you can be selective of your states. And this is all basically what self-empowerment is all about. It's controlling your mind, mm-hmm. right? That's what it all comes down to. It's not controlling people. It's not controlling circumstances. It's not controlling anything else but your own mind, your own thoughts. That is the true self-empowerment mm-hmm. Process. The next one is minds go in circles. And this one I think we've all experienced way too many times, especially with negative thoughts. And it can either be a spiral circle or it can be a loop on itself. I mean, the mind flips back on itself. And one example is, let's just say you're coming home, you're stopped off at the grocery store to get some food for a dinner you want to cook for your wife or significant other, and you get the bags, and you have the bags out there, and you also have some milk for peanut butter sandwich later on, and the milk drops and falls all over you. Well, then you get pissed, and you go, man, why do I got to go shopping? Why can't she go shopping? Look at that. You know, this relationship really sucks. We haven't been doing it. And all of a sudden, you start going on this spiral about how everything sucks because one thought leads to another of the same quality. And, you know, it's, I'm sure we've experienced that.
Oh, yeah. Yes, that's. We don't need to comment any further.
Right, but and what's important is it can work in the opposite. When you think of a good thought, a puppy, mm-hmm. a cat, a kitty. Well, if you don't like kitties, whatever. But mm-hmm. if you think of something happy, you will then start thinking more happy thoughts, and you keep that going in circles as well. So knowing that it goes in circles, and it can also be those other strange circles where you think, well, I got to go to work today, and, oh, what should I wear? I need new shoes. Oh, shoes, I got to go shopping. Oh, when am I going to get paid? You know what? I need to get a new job, and those type of circles, right?
Yeah.
Where one leads to another, and then all of a sudden you're relocating to Istanbul or something. And then you snap out of it, and you've driven way past your work location or something else.
Well, what are we saying? I'm in Istanbul right now. It's pretty cool there.
So this is where the mind goes in circles, and we all experience it. And that's those circles are trance, right? Those are transitions. So if you start going back and reviewing these facts of the mind, each one leads into the other, right? It's pictures. We think in pictures. We go into trance. The mind goes in circles. The mind goes in circles because we're not in present. We're in trance. Mm-hmm. So it can continuously does these. So these are all dependent on each other.
And it's strange because the longer your mind goes in circles, the further it may seem to get back to the present. The further it may, you know, take, because it feels like it may feel like a long road to the present just because of how ingrained you are in that trance.
Oh, exactly.
And not realizing that, hey, we kind of live in a real world now.
Yes, and pay attention to now, which is really important, right, to be here now. And there's a point where when you're here now functioning, it's one thing, but when you're here now observing, and I wrote a blog about that also, because there's this part of being here now and just watching the world. Well, if you can do that for so long, but then you're not contributing. Right, you're here now. You're watching the sunset. You're watching the cars go by. You're watching an accident happen. You're here now, but are you doing anything? So there's also, for me, there's action involved with being here now.
Oh yeah, like for example, when you're sending a very important email, you know, be focused on the email. Be focused on your grammar.
Right.
Don't focus on what you're going to have for lunch, or don't think about I want to send this email now. So I could, because I'm really hungry and I want to get lunch. No, think about, you know, because, you know, thinking about lunch while you're sending an email just take longer to finish the email in the first place because you're not engaged. But, you know, when you are engaged in the email and just diligently paying attention to what you're going to write and you send it off, yeah, then you can have lunch.
Right. Very, very good. And then the last part of the facts of the mind is that the mind frames things, and basically what a frame is, it gives meaning. So one of our very first podcasts, we talked about nothing has meaning but the meaning you give it. Mm-hmm. And this is where that comes back to, is there's no situation good or bad, but thinking does it so. And it's there's nothing beautiful, but you think it's beautiful. And when you can control how you frame something, and this is with NLP, we call it reframing. Mm-hmm. So if somebody has a behavior that they don't like and they beat themselves up on it, we would say, where would that behavior come in handy? Oh, okay, great. So you reframed it. So now it's not such a bad behavior. It's just maybe not supportive in this context, but in another context, it may be supportive. And this is where reframing is very, very helpful in giving meaning to a situation, to a thought, to an experience, in producing that map to where you want to go. Mm-hmm. And this whole subject on framing could take another 10 podcasts because it's so important that we judge things so often and judge as good and bad, because you judge something as pretty, you're still judging it.
Yeah.
And you judge something bad, you're still judging it. So judgment itself isn't bad because we all do it. We just have to. We can't go throughout life without it. Otherwise, we'd be like Spock.
Yeah. You know, living with poor judgment can also lead to a lot of unfortunate mistakes too.
Right, unless we reframe that and see what those mistakes can teach us, right?
Yes.
So that's a perfect, you know, one of those overdone reframes is it's not a problem, it's a challenge. It's not a problem, it's an opportunity.
Yeah.
You know, and anybody who's been in corporate world has heard this reframe 1,000 times. We're all sick of it.
Yes.
However, when it was first used, it was very important. It invoked, for those of us who like challenges, it did invoke some sort of a sit up straight and listen, let's go out and conquer. The whole military is based on reframing. The whole economics, politics is all based on reframing. So we all are being reframed all the time. What's important to know is that you can reframe your own existence. Mm-hmm. You can reframe your own thoughts. You can reframe your own behaviors, your own results. One of the best reframes or best meanings that you can do for anything is, what can I learn from this? Regardless if it's good or bad, what can I learn from this? And that would be a reframe, as opposed to saying, this sucks. Well, reframe it and go, what can I learn from this? And that's giving it a different meaning. That's giving it an education, as opposed to, you know, a flat out lose, suck, whatever it is. And that's one of the presuppositions with NLP is, right, there's no failure, there's only feedback. Mm-hmm. And the feedback is what you derive from it. But really, again, very, very important that the mind, you can control what something means. And when you understand that, that is so powerful, because that means that you can always have a happy life.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, you have control, not you, Rishi, but you do, and I do. But generically, people have control over their own happiness because they can frame any experience they want to create the happiness by creating a different picture, by having the mind go in circles, by transitioning, to, you know, by all of it. So this is really, really important by framing it, because if you look at, we frame something, we create a picture by what it means. That picture creates a state. That state creates a physical experience. And then we wonder why we have ulcers and all the other things. Where something happens, we can reframe it, give it a meaning that's good. Well, our body will respond differently, and we'll have a different life.
Interesting. Interesting.
So those are basically the big seven facts of the mind. And again, you know, go back and listen to these again and take some notes, because they are very, very, very important and powerful. This is the equation for you listeners, for us, Rishi and myself, to create the life we want. Is we just gave the instruction list.
Would you say that these seven facts are the foundation of your coaching style?
Absolutely. It's the seven facts of Mental Strength 101. I just don't, when I work with people, I like to educate them as well. And Robert Diltz talks about this from coach to awakener. And part of those involve different hats. And one of those hats is a mentor and a coach and a teacher. And so when I coach with somebody, I just don't coach them. I help educate them a little bit as to, so that they can go out and take control of their own thoughts. So this is basic foundation for my coaching style is, you know, for mental strength is understanding these facts. And then we see in a later time how we can use those facts to play the game of the mind game, mm-hmm. and how we can use those to change and manipulate our mind so that we can create a life that we want.
And a lot of these facts may appear abstract. People who are listening may understand a few facts, but are kind of lost on the other facts, and it helps to have a good coach to be able to direct you to not only help you understand what these facts are, because that's the easy part, but direct your life so you can live with these seven magnificent mind facts and incorporate them into your own life to make just life more meaningful and more happy.
Great. Wonderfully said. That's awesome. Very, very good. So with that, I think we're going to close out this session with the seven magnificent mind. It's like the Magnificent Seven, right? Yes.
Oh, the Clash.
Right.
Actually,
no, there's a movie, right? The Magnificent Seven.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
With Lee Marvin.
Yes. Yes.
Right, one of those westerns.
Mm-hmm.
So with that, we kind of transitioned to something else. Mm-hmm. But remember, every facet, every compartment of your mind is to be programmed by you. And if you don't take your rightful responsibility and begin to program your own mind, the world will program it for you.